Hey guys, Tim Fitzpatrick here, and you're listening to Hey, Can I Come Over? Each week, or as often as time allows, I will rudely invite myself over to someone's house, insist they make me dinner to my particular diet specifications, and force them to answer as many personal questions as I can manage in an hour or so. Before we begin with my first ever guest, I'd like to preface this by saying this is my very first ever foray into the world of podcasting as well as interviewing. I promise that as we go along, I'll improve and learn as best as I can. Hopefully in the meantime, you'll learn a little bit about me and hopefully a little bit about my guests. Just bear with the growing pains. With all that being said, I have a pretty good feeling we're about to have a pretty good time. My inaugural guest is the man who actually assisted me in conceiving the idea for this podcast. He is a musician, writer, poet, brewer, educator, comedian, great bud.
It sounds good coming all in a row like that.
Exactly, yeah. And as far as I can tell, a pretty damn good husband. Ladies and gentlemen, the amazing, multi-talented Michael Goldens. Mike.
Hi, everyone.
Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
It's great to be here at your apartment, mm-hmm. where you have made me a...
I made you an omelet with spinach, feta, cheese, and tomatoes.
Which was delicious.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Oh, and a side of roasted potatoes.
And a side of roasted potatoes, which were fantastic.
Thank you.
Also, we are currently drinking... you might want to go get the bottle. It's Bella. It's on your counter.
Oh. There it is.
We're currently drinking Bella from the Rognus Brewing Company, based out of... I can't even pronounce that. Pflugerville, Texas, which...
Pflugerville,
which is presumably close to Austin, Texas, where I visited only about a month ago, and was recommended to me by the brewer of, like, this craft beer bar, but also cool jazz bar. It was very interesting.
It's definitely a very good beer. I like it.
I enjoyed it quite a bit. I guess we'll get down to it.
Cool.
Me and Mike have been good friends for about, I want to say, 8 or 9 years. Is that correct?
Yeah.
We met at a party at Joe Jamsky's. Joe Jamsky's, in which
the first time I remember us talking was when we were waiting in line for the bathroom. Joe's mom did something involving, like, homeopathic things, and one of the things she did involved, like,
Animus.
She did Animus. And so we call, I always called it the ass room or something like that. And so we were in there, and of course, we met in the ass room. That's all good friendships begin. And I remember waiting to use the bathroom and talking to you there. That was the first time I remember, but we could have met prior or after at parties. I was drunk.
I'm pretty sure it was the same party, but the one thing that I remember, the first time that I remember you, mm-hmm. is you noticed on my keychain, at the time, I had a September 13th keychain.
Yes.
And you have the same birthday as me, mm-hmm. so you remarked on it, and the rest is a magical history. All right, I'm going to actually get down to what you do.
Okay.
I don't care about what you do for your job, and I'm assuming none of my listeners do, but you do a lot on the side, like mm-hmm. an unbelievable amount. I don't know how you do it and still have like any kind of free time. But you have been a member of a lot of bands since I've known you.
Yeah.
And you were playing music long before that.
Yes. Yeah, before I met you, I was probably in like four or five bands.
Okay.
But being in them, I mean, you've been in many bands where, like, you're in... I was probably in two that played a show. The four or five. The rest were those, like, post-high school bands that kind of get started and have practices for a few months and fizzle out.
Fizzles out, yeah.
So I was in, like, four or five of those and probably, I don't know, maybe around the same, like, from the point where I met you on.
And what, the first band that you were in, what was that?
First band that I was in was Adam's Apples.
Never. Oh, that was the first?
Yep, okay. That was the first. I took guitar lessons. I always wanted a guitar. And when I was probably about, like, 11 years old, my grandfather had this friend of his, and he gave me a guitar for, like, my birthday or something. It was a close family friend. He wasn't, like, a weird, like, SVU episode in the making. But he gave me a guitar, and he, like, made the guitar. He was an electrical engineer, so he made me an electric guitar. I totally did not appreciate the fact that this man made me an electric guitar.
No, because I've never heard you bring this up before.
Right, exactly. I didn't appreciate it at all. And then, I mean, I said thank you, but it went over my head that he made it himself. Mm-hmm. And so I played that for a while. I took guitar lessons, and then I dropped guitar for a while, and I started skateboarding all the time.
Right.
And it wasn't until your friend and mine, Adam Mancuso, broke up with his high school girlfriend and wanted to do, like many high schoolers want to do when that happens, and start a band.
Of course, yeah.
So the band we started was Adam's Apples, a thrash punk band.
Which, in this current iteration, I am actually a member of,
yes,
as well.
That's right.
We have not... performed or
no.
been to, in fact, we've never performed as a whole.
No, not us.
But we have an EP.
Yep. Adam's Apples wanted to. Adam's Apples performed last in 2002.
Oh.
And then we wanted to do it on our
10 year anniversary
perform. We wanted to do it on a 10 year anniversary in 2011.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't happen. And then we're just like, maybe we could do it on the 10 year anniversary of it, you know, ending, and that didn't happen. So now, whenever. Our avid fan base will have to just wait a little bit longer.
Sorry, guys. Someday.
Yeah. But that was a lot of fun. That was my first incarnation of being on stage. So it was frightening, but somehow awesome.
That was always awesome.
Yeah. I remember coming back from the first time I ever played.
Which was where?
First time I ever played was Da Funky Fish. In Bayshore. Well, our gig, it's not like we got booked.
Uh-huh.
The band Bombs Away got booked, and our friends Matt and Mike and Andy, and we're friends with everyone in the band. they played.
It was like a seven-piece
sound.
You want to list all of them.
Right. So it was their gig, and Matt was drumming for us. And Matt said, you know, he's like, just tack on at the end of our gig. Just, you know, at the end of our set, just come up on stage, because he was in the band anyway, so he's like, I'll just move to drums. And so the Funky Fish had no idea that we were coming up on stage. We were just two people, so we came up, because we never had the bassist. So we came up on stage and played there, and it was fun because of the fact that, not that Bombs Away was known and super popular or anything, but, you know, the little tiny punk circles that existed.
A little bit of cred.
Yeah, between Sachem and Connectquot.
Mm-hmm.
So
I had heard of it.
So they had, you know, a decent amount of kids there. And so it was fun that was the first time I played, but frightening because, you know, there were kids there. And I remember staring at the floor the whole time, at the stage. Every time I started a song, which we only played like three, so with us that was like a minute, I dropped my pick every time. I just went
every
like this because my hand was so shaking from being nervous. So when I went down, I just dropped on the floor. And so
you just played the rest of the song.
I played the rest of the song with my finger, which was shred up because it's playing just thrash, quick songs.
My first gig at the Downtown with Grandma's Little Boys,
and that was your first gig ever.
No, it was
first gig at the Downtown.
My first gig at the Downtown.
I say that beats mine.
Well, yeah, which for sure was like that was the, you know, we thought we had reached the top at that point.
Oh yeah, well the Downtown at that point on Long Island, it's not like Paramount didn't exist or anything like that. I mean, I guess Vanderbilt did, but that was sort of. I didn't even think about that as an option.
At that point, Vanderbilt had been closed down.
Oh,
so,
did, oh
yeah.
Was it? Okay, there you go.
So that was like the end-all be-all for us, mm-hmm. And I remember cutting up my finger when I had lost my pick in just one song and bleeding all over my guitar.
Yeah, yeah.
It was disgusting. Like, the strings started to get rust really quickly. It was just a bad scene. But then we got compliments from the guys from Arrogant Sons of Bitches.
That's awesome.
Which, again... Ska kid me
yeah.
in freshman year of college is like, wow,
Well, that's awesome.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, American Sons, they have a Wikipedia page, so.
They do. So, right, I'm the one who updates it. all right. Where am I? So you've been in many bands, but you're only in... there's a gray area with one of them. You're in the Fiend right now.
Yes, I am.
Technically.
Right.
You guys have practiced...
three times since.
Okay, alright. But you have, you've replaced me as the lead singer.
Yes, exactly.
Which is fine, because I left on my own will. It wasn't like I didn't develop any habits or anything like that.
Right.
But, so you guys have practiced a couple times. Any gigs coming up with them?
We're playing the Porchef Brewery in August. Some Wednesday in August. I think maybe the 17th, but that could be just a throw out there date. I'm not too sure. In the middle of the month. And then some halfway to St. Paddy's Day show on September 14th, Saturday.
Okay. Awesome. I will keep all the listeners, my many listeners, updated on that August 17th show whenever I get whenever I'm told when exactly it's happening.
Yeah.
And then, obviously, there is our Twilight pastime.
Right.
Which I am a fan of.
Thank you.
A lot of my listeners, presumably, are fans of.
Right.
What's up with our Twilight pastime?
Anything? I mean, our Twilight pastime now, I still write music. And if I were to put out music, I would still put it out under our Twilight pastime. But... like, I haven't gone out and played an Our Twilight Pastime gig in a long, long time. Because Our Twilight Pastime is just me. I should explain that.
Yes.
It's just me.
Sorry.
It's like the plural title.
This is my first podcast.
But it's one of those things where, let's say there's this, what is it, Homegrown Music Cafe. Mm-hmm. I was supposed to be playing there and doing five songs, which I would have... I think I was billed as Mike Goldens, and I don't really correct them anymore. Mm-hmm. I used to really, like, when I first started playing as Our Twilight Pastime in 2005, and I used to be really, like, adamant, or like, I'm Our Twilight Pastime. So they announced me as that. And I used to always care to be announced as that. And I think that was more of just, like, insecurity of saying this is Mike Goldens, and then I'm out there, and it's just me playing more than anything. Mm-hmm. But it was one of those, that was one of those things where slowly over time... now, especially that I'm playing more like bars and places like that for like 3 hours, where I'm like putting my originals in with a bunch of cover stuff.
Right.
I don't go out there and say I'm more Twilight pastime. But as for music recording and everything, I put out 2007 was Drunken Sailors. That was the last album that I put out,
right,
quote unquote, because I just, you know, said it was out to friends and gave it to and put it on Bandcamp. Or whatever, MySpace then. I don't know what I put it on in 2007. But, but now I have an album that I never released. But to me, it's like an old album because
it's old now. Yeah,
it's 2009, 2010. I had recorded all those songs. It was like 10 or 11 songs. And I recorded them all. And I never did anything with them. And at this point, I had this grand scheme of like, I want this album to be like more lush and developed. And it was kind of the same scheme I had for Drunken Sailors. Mm-hmm. But in Drunken Sailors era, I kind of just did most things myself. And this one, it's just like bare bones, me and a guitar. But I'm thinking, you know, I have it, and I have it mixed with the exception of one vocal track I want to redo. So I should just put it out there.
You could theoretically
release it. I could theoretically just, yeah, I could release it on Bandcamp and say, here we go.
You post it on Facebook, man, and
yeah,
you'll have, like, 20 downloads in the first, like, week or so. It'll be wild.
It'd be fun, because not everyone has heard, I mean, people who have seen me live since have probably heard all the songs by now. Mm-hmm. There may be a couple I've never played live, just out of, because I don't know, I feel like they wouldn't sound good live. But, I do want to put that out. And I've only written, like, since that album in 2010, I've only written, like, three songs. It's been like more because that's when my creative sort of drive shifted to doing more brewing.
Right.
2010 was big you and I brewing all the time, and so my sort of creative gears, I feel like the way my mind works, some people can just do a million things at once and that's cool. And with me, I go in these little like layers, like I'll do or levels rather, like I'll do brewing for a while, and not that I lose interest in it, but like my creative gears will start to shift, and I'll be like, oh, let me, you know, I want to write again, and I'll start writing poetry again for, like, you know, months, a year, 2 years, whatever, and then that'll be my creative drive, and then I'll just shift back to something else.
Exactly, yeah, and I think a lot of people go through that as well, because they're so... most creative people, they want to focus on one thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Because if they're not focusing on that one thing, and they're doing a bunch of things all at once, nothing really gets the full effort that it deserves.
Yeah, creative, that sort of like, the act of creating, I feel like, is semi-obsessive in the fact that you know, you think about it in that same way, where it's sort of like if you've had songs in your head that you wanted to write, or you've had an idea for it, and it's like the only thing you can think about.
Oh, yeah.
Like with me, like I can't, when I have a song idea, if it's at work, I don't listen to music on the way home because I don't want to
forget it.
Yeah, I don't want things to flood in the brain and then I can't remember what it was. So, you know, I feel like that's why I've been wanting to shift back into my music lately. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe partially probably because I'm playing in the Fian, like just practicing with them is getting that drive back up. As opposed to me playing alone is great, but if I'm just playing by myself, I don't have that interaction with people.
Right.
So that like pump me up sort of feel isn't as there as when it is with other people. So.
Exactly. I find going to like live shows and stuff like that always kind of gets me to want to write more and go and play more. You see those people playing, having such an awesome time and making something really good.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh man, I miss doing that.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
And we're sort of the same in the fact that, you know, we both are the type of people that like, that get really interested in a bunch of different things, and then at the same time go, hey, I'd like to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's another way, like, everything that I'm sort of interested in, at some point I go...
You just do it.
Yeah, like, can I do that? Can I do that on my own?
For example, like... Well, you also did the webcomic stuff.
Yep, I did that for a little over a year.
Mm-hmm. Which was... I can't remember. I didn't do my research on that.
Escalated Competency.
Escalated Competency, which was... The name was made... how did you come up with the name of that?
That name may or may not... Oh, no, it wasn't. I was thinking maybe it was random, like a random generator, but it wasn't a random generator. That was Dear Mr. So-and-So, but right. Which we did that with. But for Escalade, the name was... I purposely tried to make it, like, business-speak vague language to basically come up with the idea that... It was Dinosaur Comics-esque, and I started it as that, as going, Dinosaur Comics is awesome, and he doesn't have to, like, draw it every day. It's the same thing, and he just gets to be a writer, basically, for this comic. I'd like to do that as just a sort of... creative outlet.
Right. Because you can or can't draw?
I can doodle, and I can probably draw a decent, like, for webcomic standards, like, some webcomics are freaking amazing in terms of their art, right. And then other webcomics are super sketched out, or don't even contain barely any art, or the same art for 10 years.
I mean, I've seen you do doodles for, like, the labels that we did for the Bruins.
Yeah, yeah.
Stuff. Like,
I could. Drawing is one of those areas where, like, takes like it's so much dedication and so much time. It's very like to do, you know, to be really, really good and practice your craft on that. I mean, with anything, you should practice your craft and you should put effort and time into it. I don't mean that, but like,
I guess.
Yeah. But with drawing, it's one of those things where like you can sit down and people who paint or draw, they spend 6 hours and they're just like, they're like, oh, I did the background of this one thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very slow process, and because a lot of Escalade was just done for fun in my spare time, I just wanted to cut that part out.
It was mostly just, you know, downtime at work.
Yeah, exactly.
Something
yeah.
to do.
Yep, and I would just do that and write one, because it was just clip art that was pasted together. But the name basically meant that I was overcoming the fact that I couldn't really draw well enough to just, like, put it out there. So I was escalating or going above my confidence.
But here I am always assuming it had something to do with cars.
But it was made to sound stupid because the whole, it was about the business guys.
Right, it was supposed to be like business jargon.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, quickly back to our Twilight pastime
before
we move on.
Mm-hmm.
This album that's pretty much made, does it have a title?
Little Bird. Little Bird is the title. I've gone back and forth with that, and there's a line in one of the songs on there where I say, you, me, and the record player. And I was thinking of calling it You, Me, and the Record Player, especially because every one of my albums so far have been just two words. I had Terra Firma, I had Drunken Sailors, now I'd have Little Bird. Then I'm like, alright, I should get away from that at some point. But I didn't know because I'm like, I don't know if I should go out there and call you, me, and the record player. So I went back and forth, and I've been calling it Little Bird since 2010. So at this point, it's sort of ingrained in my mind. It'd be like, you know, I don't know, like J.K.K. Rowling changing the name Harry Potter. That's exactly
it. Threw in an extra K there, but yeah.
Let's stay away from... We'll keep the Ks to a minimum. Keep the viewership as up as we can. I was thinking of, what's,
J.R.R. Tolkien.
J.R.R. Tolkien, yes.
And you're mixing his, you're mixing J.R.R.
Ah, yes, J.R.R. Tolkien, Rally. yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Two completely different subjects. one way better than the other one.
We'll let you decide. But yeah, so it would be called...
Try not to put out any opinions or anything. So, again, we don't put off any viewers.
Right.
Well, no, Lord of the Rings is the best because Gandalf.
But yeah, it's one of those things where, like, I going back and changing it now, even though I've never released it, it's just been, I've been calling it that for so long, I'm probably just going to call it Little Bird.
Probably feel weird calling it anything.
Yeah. So I'm just going to go by that. And I also went back and forth on calling myself, again, the Back to the Art Twilight Pastime thing, calling myself Art Twilight Pastime. Mm. Like, when I first started, it was only, like, 2 years ago, I think, when I started playing bars and doing that whole scene. And I remember asking friends, Kristen and Adam, if I was like, should I go by, you know, Mike Goldance, or should I stick with Art Twilight Pastime? And they both were like, Art Twilight Pastime, stick with it. But they've been around since, you know, the dawn of the name, so I guess they just aren't used to it. So I was like, all right, yeah, I'll do it. But I started to get to that point where flip-flop, now I started to feel like a pretentious ass, being like, announce me as Art Twilight Pastime. Please, to this bar full of people who don't even want to listen
to you.
So
they have to know.
So I went back and forth on that, but I think at least with Little Bird, I would call it Art Twilight Pastime.
Gotcha. You have written quite a bit of poetry.
Yes.
You have a website or a Tumblr or WordPress? Or...
I have a Tumblr. I've had both. I've had I have a Tumblr now. Let me get that out. And I had a WordPress for a while. Mm-hmm. Poetry used to be like my main creative outlet, because before I would like go and do singer-songwriter stuff, I would like play guitar in my room and like create songs that no one would ever hear and sing them to the computer microphone and save them on the part of my hard drive where no one can ever find them. But like,
where most people were keeping their porn.
Yep. But but it was you know, poetry was my main creative outlet, and I kind of just like, I would, from like high school to like 2005, I was just constantly writing. Even longer than that, I would just write almost every day, if not every day.
What? How did you get into that? How did writing poetry become something you did so frequently?
Well, I got into it in senior year of high school. I started to get into. I always credit the Descendants for making me care about lyrics to some capacity, because I love music always, but I never really, like, when I loved punk all throughout high school, I didn't give a crap what they were saying, but I just didn't, I was like, whatever, yeah.
It's you're there political. For the energy, you're yeah. there for the, just right. it being punk.
Right. I was like 15, so I was just there, it was energetic, and I loved the music, and I was like, this is great. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it was when I started getting into the Descendants, and I started being like, whoa, these guys are like, I like the lyrics, they're, you know, I'm nerdy and feel like an outcast sometimes, too, this works out.
Perfect.
And I got to like, when I got an AFI and the Weaker Thens, both of them got me more into writing poetry. At the time, probably more AFI, and now definitely more the Weaker Thens, John K. Samson. I loved him then, but, you know, it's the AFI is good for, like, a lark now for me, where I'll be like, oh, yeah, it's all immortal. That's a good time. But, like, but, you know, I can still rock the whole Left and Leaving album, you know, start to finish, and love every second of it.
Absolutely.
So, you know, that... But they got me more into it, and I just basically started because I was like, I wanted to write words down, but I didn't want to write a song. So, like,
you started poetry out of laziness?
Maybe, yeah. Because I remember the first poem that I wrote, and, like, Davey Havoc of AFI and, like, John K. Samson both wrote poetry to some extent, you know, I think John Kay a little more, like, I would say professionally, because he's put out poetry books and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they both wrote to that extent and have discussed it, and you would read interviews and they'd be like, oh, I love, you know, X poet, you know, and I'd be like, cool, I should check this out. So I remember the first poem that I wrote, it was like, just, if you Google, like, typical teenage poem.
Worse than that?
It would be them. it was something about, like, darkness, the sky dripping blackness into the soul. It was some gothy thing. And
it really
I wasn't even a goth.
To me, man.
Right. I wasn't even a goth or anything like that, but it was just some weird thing like that. And
just a kid with hormones, man.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I started writing all these other things. I went in a lot of like phases sort of trying to find what is my poetic voice? Like what do I feel comfortable writing in? And so, you know, as I started to just write more out of the fact that I just wanted to write stuff down, I started to read more poetry. And I would read poetry, and then I would get really, really into that. And then just, you know, that's what sort of spawned that whole thing. So I would just constantly write and just save, like, text files and email to my friends every once in a while.
Who did you read that kind of pushed you in that direction?
In the very beginning, E. Cummings did a lot. And it's funny because now, and it's only been, you know, I mean, I'm not that old. It's only been like it's only been like 12 years since I first wrote my first column, so you know, but it's E. Cummings. It feels so different. Like E. Cummings now, I can enjoy, but he's not like my favorite. He's very sort of like this imaginative, huge wordplay type of like he's super playful with his words and everything. And I just loved I think more than anything was his command he had over poetry, because he was writing stuff that was so whimsical and sometimes it weren't even real words. But he made it work so well. And I think that sort of confidence his writing had gave me confidence to say, hey, I want to keep writing like this. Even though I never necessarily, like, I never wrote a poem in all lowercase that contained nonsense words. But, you know, yeah, I kept writing, and as when I was going to college to get my English degree, I started really just going sort of against what initially got me into it to an extent, that idea of, like, the layered textual poems that, like, have all these different meanings, like the T.S. Eliot type of poems that are just, you know, you can read them and people could spend their whole lives talking about what one poem means. I just started to be like, this is BS, man. Like, I hated the idea of just, you know, I'm like, why don't you just write a poem that's what it is,
and
that's it. And I remember there was this one time, one class, when I was going to college, and we were talking about it's going to bother me. Famous imagist poet, early 20th century. It's really going to bother me. And now when
You're
I listen to this,
the wrong person.
When I listen to this now, it's going to bug the hell out of me. Where I'm like, it was him. It was him, obviously. It was him.
Like, you idiot. Come on.
Anyway, he wrote a famous poem about you know, about taking a plum out of an ice box and eating it. And the whole poem was basically just like, I took the plum out of the ice box and it was ate it. I'm sorry. It was really juicy and good. It was like the whole poem. It was it. And I loved it because it was the complete like antithesis of all of these other poems that like I would read or when I was going to college, and they had all, you had to just learn all these like different things. And I was like, I love this. It just is what it is. And it paints a good picture. He took a plum out of the fridge. It was good. And it was someone else's. He's like, sorry. That's it. And, you know, I remember being in a class. We were discussing it. And we were discussing, like, you know, imagist movement of the early 20th century. And this one kid was, like, vehemently against the idea that it did not have a hidden subtext to it. He was just, he was at the opposite end of where I was at,
mm-hmm.
which is respectable. He can be wherever he wants. But he was like, a poem has no point in existing if it's only, if
it's not a secondary
yeah,
meaning.
Yeah, he's like, if this meaning of this poem is, the poem is just entirely like, hey, you know, you ate a plum, that's it. He's like, what's the point in reading it? And it's a valid argument. Why? Why would you care? But I love that same sort of idea. I thought I almost had his name in my head, but I bet. I love that same idea of just, you know, painting a picture and having a scene there. And I started to really get into that whole side. So I would read, like, Ted Kooser, Richard Brautigan, what is his name? Merwin, W.S. Merwin, thank you.
Maybe
book right in front of me. I was thinking W.H., but that's not right. But down to an extent where it's just, it is what it is, and I liked that whole thing. I started getting into this idea with poetry of it being what I call conversationally eloquent, where it's like, it's what I always kind of strive for my poems to be, which is just like, it's like you're sitting down at breakfast with someone, and like you're reading the paper, a laptop or tablet now, and you like, you're someone sipping coffee, and they're just like, huh, you know, and they say something, like anything, like, oh, that tree over there has tangled branches, it looks like hair. And you're like, it does look like hair. And you go back to what you're doing. And I like that.
That's
what I want my poems to be at most is that little moment. That mm-hmm. tiny little moment of just like, hey, look at this for a second. And then you could just go about your
because
day.
Because sometimes you're sitting in those moments and you're like, oh, wow, this makes me feel a particular way.
Yeah. And it's that idea. It's the same thing where I love snapshots, candid pictures. And it's the same type of idea. Or a candid picture versus a posed picture. Posed pictures always, almost always going to be professionally better in the sense of, hey, you had them at the right angle and they were in this portion of the third of the this. I mean, a good photographer obviously can do whatever he wants and make it work, but that snapshot that you took, like the little Polaroid, to me it would have more meaning because it captures life better than the other one. So to me, like,
emotion from someone.
Exactly. So to me, like, having those little, like, as you know, tiny segments of poems that are just three lines and that's it. Like, to me, that may capture so much more about that one moment. Mm-hmm. Like, Richard Brautigan has a poem where the title is, which, I don't know, are you having cursing on this podcast, by the way?
Yeah.
Alright, you can bleep me out if you want to bleep me out, so it's fine. But this is Richard Brautigan's fault, because I've been clean up to this point.
I know which one you're going to.
The fuck me like fried potatoes one. Yep.
Yes.
And that's the title, and then it's just like something of, like, I'm the hungriest goddamn morning of my life, and I love that. I love it because I'm like, that's great. It's just awesome. And he's just like, hey, I'm horny probably, and you like, and I looked at your ass. I don't know what the situation was, but that was it. And it just, it says so much more to me than if it was this huge, like, he used a symbol for the ass.
like a peach. Or like
that,
he's into
that
it.
Crease right down the peach.
Like a what do you call it? Like a pastry bag full of cottage cheese, or
I don't know what he's into, you know.
Pastry bag full of cottage cheese. But so I really,
I don't think a pastry bag is a pastry bag an actual thing?
I think so, yeah. Okay. I think that's what they call it.
Right. I meant cheesecloth.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but
that makes more sense. Yeah. What are you piping? I make these awesome vegan cupcakes you'd never want to eat. with cottage cheese icing.
Oh, God. It makes me think of too many things that Christina would actually make.
But, so, in terms of, you know, poetry was strange, and it always will kind of have this backbone to me because it's so easy to get back into. Like, in terms of just, I can go tomorrow. And I haven't written a poem in a while, and I want to. So tomorrow I may go and write a poem. I don't know.
I hope so. I'll be looking for it.
Nice. And I just like that whole, I love that whole thing. And I loved it enough to self-publish poetry books twice.
That was where I was getting to.
Nice!
And my actual question was,
yeah,
how many poetry books have you published?
Two,
yes.
But I don't know if you have the first one. I hope not.
I have the second one.
Good.
Yeah.
Yes. So, because the first one, basically, I was like 17 when I started writing poems. So at 18, I was like, "Hey, I'm on this website. It's 2001. I'm on this website on the net that you can post your poems."
We were calling it that, by the way.
I posted my poems on the site, and people liked it. You know, it was a big circle jerk kind of anyway, because you'd like their poems, they'd like yours, and you'd be like, "Ah, yeah, it's great." So it was this huge thing, and.
What was it called? I actually never have heard
it.
That.
Was called Love Stories.
Really?
Yes. Even at the moment, because I've not that... None of the poems were particularly love stories. I think they just bought the domain name and were like, let's roll with it.
Yeah.
Because they couldn't think of a better one at that point. And it was that, and I remember they had, like, Poem of the Month, which I won once, May 2002.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Did you get, like, a... plaque or
this trophy I'm wearing around my neck, yes.
Yeah. Oh, that was going to be my next question. What the fuck is that?
But no, they sent me an email. That's about it.
With an attachment?
Probably. Like a GIF. Or a thumbs up. But it was...
Did they have GIFs back then? I don't even remember.
But they, you know, I was on that site and I thought, oh, this is an excellent idea. Like, I love this, and I have a savings account, so let me self-publish a book of poems. And so I spent like $300, I don't even know, on self-publishing this book of poems called As the Curtain Falls. I'm trying to see if I had it all. I know I gave one to Katie kind of early on in the relationship, and I said, like, this is the book I don't want to show anybody. Because it was just like 18-year-old poems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a bold move to give someone that you just start a relationship with a book of shitty poetry.
I'm a bold man.
Yeah, it turned out pretty well.
It did.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was... I did that one, and, you know, I don't know, it was just, you know, it was fun to get that, but then I basically just had a box of them in the attic forever.
And you just gave it to people, or did you sell them?
For a while, no, I never, that one, did I sell one of those? I think I sold one.
Two?
The bookstore that used to exist, where Down the Rabbit Hole is now, in Sayville.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Runaway Bay, I think it was called.
Yeah, something like that.
I went to them one time, and I must have been 19 or 20, but it was still okay. I still thought the book was good. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I remember going to them and being like, I self-published a book of poems. I'm sure they never heard this. And, you know, do you want to buy it? And they were like, here's what we do. They had a whole plan. They're like, for $15... I'll take three of them now. We'll sell it on consignment. I don't know the name. Consignment, I think it is.
Yeah.
We're basically like, you know, we'll give you the money now. If we sell them, you know, then we need more. We'll get back to you on it. And they never did.
They never got back to you. Huh?
Never got back to me. But I sold them the second book, too. The second book was in 2006. And I was looking to see if I had that. Need to get a little more pretentious to put my own books on my bookshelf.
What do you even have on this bookshelf, Mike, besides your own books?
It's the whole top row. Take a book. I actually have your Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
That's where that is.
Take it back, please. I've been meaning to give that back to you. It's next to the Bible.
Did you finish it?
It
means as much to me. They both equally mean as much to me.
They're a package deal. I think Amazon sells them together most of the
time.
Really? Yeah. You know, most people purchase this with this. But, yeah, to that, I would still actually, like, if I thumb through Notes from the Margin, the second one, I would still actually be able to be like, oh, I like this. And I would like a lot of the poems in there, even though my style sort of changed and developed over the years, but I still like most of those. Like, I still gave that to people.
Right.
And I'd be like, have a book. They were over and I had the box in front of me. I'd be like, take it. But, yeah, that one I'm still proud of. I would still actually do something with that. And I've been thinking, and since then, you mentioned the WordPress and the Tumblr. I had that. The WordPress was called One A Day Poetry.
Right.
And I remember because I hadn't written a poem for like 2 years, and I remember being like, I'm getting back into poetry, that's it. And there's a great Ted Kooser book, which has to be on the shelf somewhere, called Winter Morning Walks. And that book is really good because basically when he was diagnosed with like a brain tumor, he would take walks in the morning. I think he was like told he should to keep up, you know, with whatever, I don't know, stay active or something. Mm-hmm. And he was like depressed, obviously, as most people would be finding out they have a brain tumor.
Okay.
And so he went on these walks and he started writing again. He hadn't written for a really long time. And he would write every day. And it has some of the most beautiful poetry I ever read in that. And I was like, you know, I'm just going to do that. I'm going to throw myself into the fire, like, you know, long-form improv style. Just throw myself in there and go, right, have to do it every day.
Right.
And it was just a lot of fun. I did that for, like, a year, and now I just do it, like, slightly more casually, where I'll write, like, every once in a while with a Tumblr account. But it's something that will always be there for me, I think.
Mm-hmm.
At least I have the English degree, so I should at least do something that relates to writing.
See here. So there are there any plans to release anything else? Or probably not.
With a book?
Yeah.
Or
the thought even like ever crossed your
thoughts
mind?
Crossed my mind because I did it so successfully twice before.
That's fair.
But no, the thoughts crossed my mind just because there's with the way One A Day worked, I have so many poems I just forgot about. Like sometimes I'll go on there just to click random and be like, I forgot I wrote this. I really like that poem. So there's a lot in there that I wouldn't mind, like, resurfacing, but I don't know, and if I got a huge surge of a demand, if I get super famous for doing something, and people, I'm like, you know what, people will buy my poetry book now, it'll just be a box in my room, then I would do it again, because I would like to, but, you know, I'm not, like, out there striving to do it or anything.
You're not exactly your savings account isn't as flush as it was when you were an 18-year-old kid, which I don't know what that exactly that says, but...
Why? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good point. At 18, I was just... Toys R Us was raking in the dough, the ladies, it was a wild ride.
It's a lot like being a hip-hop artist.
Is it?
That's what I
wouldn't know. I've never been, maybe at one point. Let's move on to, unless you want to keep talking about poetry.
No. Let's move it.
All right.
Let's turn these gears.
We're going to move on to your very new project, which you seem very excited about.
Yes.
It is called Fermentionables.
Yes.
And tell me a little bit about it.
Is it? It's going to be, I'm recording it tomorrow actually. I recorded intros, but I'm going to be finishing the recording tomorrow. It's going to be a YouTube channel that sort of bridges the gap between being educational about beer and brewing and the history of beer and being really entertaining about it. If you've ever... watched like SciShow or what's it called, Crash Course, they're Hank and John Green do those online on YouTube, and they're very like, they get a lot of hits in these things about science and about history and stuff, and they're extremely interesting the way that they do them. They're very personable, they're very good with it, they're well edited, they're in front of like a green screen, they have this random background, and they have little like things, like notes about what they're talking about. It's like a show, it's like a real show you would have seen on like, you know, like a Nickelodeon science program in like the 90s, in that sense of like how it's presented, and it's educational. You learn while you're actually watching it, and I would sit there and I would watch like episode after episode for hours of this thing, and I don't even like, you know, not that I don't care about biology or anything, but you know, I normally would never sit there, I wouldn't thumb through a textbook of biology for hours, like, I can't put this down. But with that, it was fascinating. So, and because my primary job, I'll just put a little bit out there, deals with training and like learning and how we learn.
If you want a name drop, you can totally name drop.
That's fine. It's fine.
Advanced Acoustic Concepts.
But it was, you know, with doing training with that, it got me really fascinated in the idea of, like, I love the idea of how we could, like, use YouTube to basically present a program that's, like, 5 to 10 minutes long. And, you know, it's the same way podcasts revolutionized radio. You know, is the same way YouTube can revolutionize this sense of not television, but of an episode of a show. And so I wanted to do it with beer, because I love beer, love craft beer. I work at Port Jeff Brewery.
Absolutely.
I have homebrewed with you many a time.
We are currently consuming
some. We're currently consuming beer, which is delicious. I love it.
I agree.
And it's one of those things where, with the show, I was like, I want to present it in the same fashion that those two shows are presented in the sense that I want to hit the points of being informative and where you can actually take something away from it, and it's entertaining at the same time. So I thought one of the biggest things with that is going to be like properly edited. You know, I mean, there's a lot of videos on YouTube about beer, and a lot of them are just single camera in front, no editing, just A to B, and that's it.
Every once in a while, in between takes, you'll see like a guy just like tripping over,
right,
over,
right,
a keg or,
right,
something.
Right.
Like that.
And that's fine, and that works. But I wanted this to be more like a show, like it's like, you know, on TV where you would turn it on and you see like, you know, the camera angle in different places, or just, you know, just in terms of how you can edit it. So I was like, I want to do it that way. I want to do it where it's, you know, hitting on a couple different spans of beer knowledge, where, you know, the beer geek like you or me can watch it, and also the, like, guy, girl who knows nothing about beer can tune in and be like, oh, this is cool. So I figured, I kind of am breaking it down in three different areas of beer. So first one is history, and then it goes, like, tasting notes, and then it goes into, like, brewing.
So we're... This is one episode, and you're picking a particular style?
Yep, exactly. I'm picking a particular style. So episode one's going to be pale ale. And so I did a lot of research in terms of the of pale ale's history. So there's people like Ronald Pattinson is a beer historian who works with Pretty Things. Not Ronald Patterson, the guy from, what's his name? Twilight?
Robert Pattinson?
Robert Pattinson. I always confuse their names. Ronald Pattinson is the beer historian.
Okay. Patterson.
Patterson. Is it Patterson?
I have no idea.
All right.
You said Patterson the first
time. It's one of those. Ronald Burt Patterson.
Okay.
He works with Pretty Things, you know, for their historical beers that they do, like, because he does a lot of beer history where he goes to these old breweries that have been around since the 1700s, looks through their brewer's notes, talks about, wow, okay, so they were calling this beer a K, because brewing, English beer history is weird, where they call beers like, oh, this was a K. Oh, this one was an XX. And I'm like, what the hell does that mean?
Just K as in the letter,
yeah,
K?
Yeah, just K. And I'm like, that's a style. And he's like, they called this a K. But this other brewery, 100 years later, called the K this. It's interesting how that changed. And he does it just based on the recipes they had. And so it's fascinating, because he's getting his history from... It's like an archaeologist finding the fossils. He's finding the brewer's records of what they did. So he's not going on lore or history or anything
he's
like that.
He's drawing from the actual information
right.
that's available.
There's another guy who does... and I hate the fact... Another thing I hate the fact that I don't remember the name of, but it's like Zymology... What's... Zymergist or something?
Zymergist,
yeah. He has like a famous... in the beer community blog on that, where he also delves into, and I forgot his name, and I apologize because I'm sure you're listening, sir.
And you should have done just as much research as
I should have, yes. But I subscribe to his blog and I read that all the time. So I researched the pale ale, and I tried to dig out like some basic history of the pale ale and then some history that people may not know about, even like the seasoned beer geek, because I didn't, and I like to think of myself as a seasoned beer geek. So you know, I figured history can come first, and we can kind of talk about that in a fascinating way, you know, and so the beer geek can be like, oh, I didn't know that, you know.
For example, what is something that you found out about pale ales that, are you spoiling your...
No, not at all. You know, one of the things was, basically, the way pale ale was a lot like a mild back in the 18th century, I believe, or in the 18th century it was a lot like a mild, you know, in terms of it being... not a lot of hops at all. It was basically just a beer brewed with pale malt, and that was it. It was a pale ale.
Right.
Done. When the 1800s, 19th century started rolling around, it was getting more into, like, the India pale ale styles. And so then the pale ale kind of didn't exist anymore, and they brought, like, a mild back, and then the pale ale started to come back in a different way. So they had the pale and the India pale ale, but sometimes they didn't differentiate. So going back through these brewer's notes, you have these instances where you have, like, one pale ale, which is brewed with a tremendous amount of hops, and another one that's brewed with, like, none at all, hardly. So it's interesting to know, like, you go back and you see how the difference between an India pale ale and a pale ale is almost like the difference between porter and stout, where there's little to none.
Right.
You know, if you go back in their records, it's just kind of this, it's the same beer, and some people decided they were going to call their India pale ale an India pale ale, and some said, no, it's just a pale ale, whatever.
You even get that now with, obviously,
yes.
with porter and stout, but...
Yeah.
Let's say, like, you're drinking a hoppy porter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, someone else could drink it and say, no, that's a black IPA.
Yep, exactly.
The exact same thing.
Yeah, right. You know, it's one of those things. So looking back on the history, that was just I remember that being something interesting, because I thought, you hear the story of India Pale Ale, you know, which is true, they shipped it to India, which is another thing.
It is. Okay.
They shipped it to India, but...
there's so much, like, information out there that... some people are saying that... most people are saying that this is true, and then you have the real, like, hardcore people being like, yeah, but really, like, that, there's no records of that ever actually happening.
No, they shifted to India, and actually what's funny, though, is they shifted to India, and this is the most fascinating point that I found out. They shipped India Pale Ale to India, but they also... English breweries also shipped India Porter to India. Because Porter, both in India and in England at the time, during the mid-1800s, was more popular than the pale ale was. So because of that, India Porter was a way more popular beer than the India Pale Ale. And so it's fascinating, because you never hear about an
India
Porter.
Which is presumably just a very hoppy
porter.
Yeah.
Well, black IPA, basically.
Yeah, I guess so.
But you never hear about it, you know, and that was something, looking back, I was like, wow, I didn't even know this beer style existed. You know, so that's cool doing that. And
so you had to... I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, I was going the same direction you were in, I think.
You had the three-prong thing.
Yep.
You did the history.
Yep. And I'm doing tasting, which is just going to be, you know, like... I don't want to do tasting so much where I'm sitting there and, you know, it's like, oh, this looks red.
Mm-hmm.
Let's give it a taste now. Like, I don't want it to be so dragged on, but I want it to give three beers and just different versions of it. So in the pale ale thing, I'm going to do, like, a Sierra Nevada, an American-style pale ale. I'm going to do a classic English pale ale, and then I'm going to do an American version of an English pale ale. So different ways of presenting it, and kind of give tasting notes for each one. Go through that whole scene. And then do, like,
the brewer side, which is going to be either me discussing brewing differences when you brew the beer, like differences that you would do either for the home brewer or just for someone who is watching who may be interested in why, how do you brew an English pale ale versus how do you brew an American pale ale. And if I can get local breweries to, like, if I can interview them during that portion, that may be something I do in the future during that side.
I was going to ask, did you have plans for, like, guest spots and things like that?
Yeah, yeah. I think that, like, working at Port Jeff Brewery,
I guess you have the end.
I can talk to the owner, Mike Philbrick, you know, and I've already warned him. I told/warned him that I'm going to be coming in with a camera and basically just filming him talking about how do you brew an English pale ale versus how do you brew an American pale ale? Like, what is the biggest difference there, you know? So there is that opening for guest spots whenever local breweries, you know, have a style that I'm talking about that I may be able to go to and then talk to them with.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Is there going to be... It's going to be a YouTube channel.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have, like, the URL for it or anything like that?
It's called Fermentionable.
Okay.
So you can search on YouTube for that. I think it's YouTube/Fermentionable. Gets you there.
I assume so.
And it's ferment and then mentionable there. It's the portmanteau of...
Right.
Because I wanted to come up with a name. That name I was struggling with for a while. I wanted to call it Beer Me originally. But then I was like, let me call it Beer Me. Just something like Beer Me. Easy. Done. And then, but one day I decided to look through Twitter. I'm like, yeah, I should get the... But I was like, I'm going to do it. You know, when it went from idea to it's happening, I was like, I should get the, like, handle Beer Me. And, of course...
Obviously, that's
it's
not,
taken a million times over. Yeah. It's like, you can have Beer Me 2876. You want that? So...
No.
I was like, you know what? Yeah, I don't want to be called that. And YouTube had a bunch of things called Beer Me. And I was like, you know what? I'm just... Let me go with a name that isn't out there yet. And I'm bad at naming things anyway. Fermentionable, I actually ended up liking a lot because it hits those two points where I'm talking about beer or anything that ferments, so I could be talking about, you know, wine at
maybe
some point.
At some point,
I don't know.
Eventually you're going to run out of
exactly.
What
it is. And, you know, mentionable with this, it being the show. So I, you know, you can just Google that or YouTube it, and you, I think it's YouTube/mentionable. I'm on Twitter too. I have to start a Facebook thing for it. I'm bad with Facebook.
Yeah, yeah.
Facebook is the one way. I go every other route except the one route where everyone I know would see it
right,
instantly.
Yeah.
Like, I have that stage always present, and I never utilize it.
So you want that? You want the people who you are already extremely close with, who will support you no matter what, to hear about it, but not the people who are on the fence about actually going on, man.
Right.
Yeah, fuck those guys.
Right.
I only want, like, my tiny circle of
right,
friends watching
it.
This.
I want it to have maybe, if it's double digits, no more than 20.
That's fair.
Views.
That's fair. Which, I mean... I'm shooting for 20 on my podcast, but it's gonna be like 4. It'll be you,
well, what
and
I,
Katie and Christina, and then me. Maybe.
What I found about almost anything, if you go to almost anything that's popular now, right, and you go back to the beginning of it, if you look at, like, comments, and I'm not talking YouTube where they make the newest one first. Like, if you go to a random old webcomic and look, the first, like, 10 comments of the first 100 things are all from, like, 5 years later when they got
right.
popular. No one commented originally. And I know, like, some sites change and then remove the comments, but, like, for the most part, your first episodes are laying the groundwork of everything, and then, like, people return back to them later.
Right.
Like, if you look at WTF, Mark Maron, like, you know, I doubt his first episode, and he was, like, a famous comedian at that point. He had been performing when he started WTF for, like, 20-plus years. Or 20 years or whatever. But, you know, his first episode...
Two wives of that.
His first episode, you know, I doubt was listened to by a large array of people.
Like,
it was probably...
You wouldn't happen to know who his first guest was, would you?
I think it was Jeff Ross, maybe? Jeffrey
okay.
Ross?
Mm-hmm.
It could have been something like that, yeah.
I have no idea. I actually went through his catalog on the podcast app, and it only took me back only, like... Maybe about a year,
yeah.
and a half, or something
yeah.
like that. So I had no idea what his.
You have to subscribe to like some premium thing to get his early podcasts and stuff.
That yeah. I want everything free. Ever. For example, dinner tonight. Thank you.
No problem. But yeah,
So it will be Fermentionables, the Twitter handle. It would be youtube.com/Fermentionables, and that is spelled FermentionTonables.
I think there's no S. I think there's
just,
no
just
S.
Fermentionables.
I think it's Fermentionables.
I'm not going to start again.
You don't need to.
All right.
I think it's just Fermentionables. It'd be hilarious, though, if someone immediately hit, once you spelled it out, they went, stop!
There it is!
Type in Fermentionables. This guy's full of shit. All his
never listen to this podcast. Never looking for anything Mike Golden's ever again.
That guy's a liar. I couldn't even find his poetry book at Runaway Bay.
No wine shop.
The wine store did not know where his poetry book was.
This guy's so unprofessional.
But yeah, that's exciting, and I'm excited for it, and that should be up sometime very soon, because I'm finishing it, and then I'm just going to edit it, and I'm not going crazy about making it perfect, because like I just said, first episodes,
right?
You know, if it gets popular, and people go back and watch the first episode, and are like, oh, it kind of sucked, they'd be like, alright, you know.
Yeah, well, I was...
First things of anything kind of suck. That's why they're
it's
firsts.
Yeah. What was it? What?
First episode of Arrested Development is,
yeah. Right. Oh, pilot. I have a big thing against pilots.
Just in general.
In general. Because pilots have so much groundwork to cover. Like, pilots are almost like just long reasons why a network should buy the show. Like, in my mind, you know, it's one of those things where it's like they have to introduce all the characters, they have to give some reason, they have to give action, they have to give a reason why it's, like, interesting enough for them to pay attention for the long term.
And if they have time, they'll throw in a plot.
Right, yeah, and they'll do that, you know. It's mostly
or
just
a joke here and there.
Yeah. Otherwise, they're mostly laying groundwork for the future, so I feel like pilots I just hate. Like, whenever Katie's big on, like, if she wants to watch a show, she'll want to watch from beginning to end. She loves Sex and the City. You know, that's her Simpsons. I love the Simpsons. But I love the Simpsons, and I don't even watch the first season, ever.
No, certainly not.
You know, it was great at the time. I watched it growing up when it was on the air. But, you know, I don't go back, and I'm sitting there, and I'm like, why would I start with season one when I really want to watch season four? Like, why would I start there? But she'll watch Sex and the City beginning to end, and then she'll go, now we go back to episode one. Not we. Like, she's not Clockwork Orange and face to it. But
like,
she's
sit down.
But she'll be like, you know, now I have to go back to episode one. And with me, episode one, ugh, no.
How many times have you guys watched Sex and the City
all the way through? Yes. I've only watched it all the way through twice, I have to say.
Every single episode.
Yes.
Only twice.
But I've seen episodes. Some episodes I've seen many, many, many times. But, you know, I put her through the same with The Simpsons. And
that's
stuff
fair.
Like that, you know? So it's one of those things. And Sex and the City, the first time we were watching it, because I remember she was getting super into it, and we were watching it, and I remember I bought her the box set one year for, like, Christmas or her birthday or something. And I remember...
What have you done? What have you wrought upon us?
And I remember her being like, oh, I want to watch it again from beginning to end. And I'm like, okay. That's cool. And I'm thinking to myself, like, all right, you know, this will be fine. So I'm watching the show. And actually, I have to say, you know, as a guy who would have had no interest in Sex and the City had I not watched it because my wife likes it, there are, like, seasons or episodes of that show where if we're on, I'd be like, oh, this is good. This is a good episode.
Every once in a while, I'll admit, and I have an ex-girlfriend, Caitlin, who was obsessed with it, and the only way that she could fall asleep
was watching
an episode of that or Friends.
Friends.
I love.
Yeah, Friends is really funny because I think that in the 90s, I watched Friends with my parents. Mostly just because, like, that and, like, Home Improvement before/during that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
It was just a thing where, like, my parents had it on. You're a kid, and so you're watching TV because you don't want to go to bed. So you're watching Friends and Seinfeld or whatever. And I enjoyed it then, and I started hating it then. Afterwards, I don't know why. There was some point where I'm like, ugh, Friends. I think I was sick of it, and then I started hating it.
Was it ever, like, a rebellion against your parents thing?
Probably.
Was there ever
probably
a rebellion against your parents?
Yeah, well, there was a rebellion against... I did the normal teenage stay-out-of-my-room thing with my mom sometimes. Like,
man,
when I was, like, 13.
Sweetheart.
I know. I feel bad now. I'm sorry, Mom. But, like, she...
I highly doubt she's going to be listening
to this. No, I know. I love my mom, but she is... To listen for an hour on, you know...
Are we on an hour?
We're on an hour.
Yeah, we only have half an hour left.
But, you know, she doesn't... Her attention span to listen to this, she'd be like, it was nice. But, well, I did the normal teenage rebellion thing of, like, stay out of my room,
it's my privacy area. Like when you go through puberty and you instantly want privacy, and then all of a sudden, not just to masturbate all the time, but for other reasons why you may want privacy.
What other reasons is there?
Homework.
Mom! Say, hey, do algebra.
My
God!
My health class told me to masturbate tonight. This is homework. But they, I did that. My dad, you know, I would say probably like any sort of like when I wore nail polish and wore like women's, not clothes, but like jackets, and I like teased my hair. When I did that whole era, that was not that I was doing it like, hey, I'll just show them. Like I wasn't painting each nail thinking that, but you know, I think a part of it probably had something to do with rebellion against those sort of like ideals and getting into some other area. But
how did your dad react to stuff like that? Because your dad, obviously, I'm an enormous fan.
Right.
Bob Goldens is one of my favorite people in the world. He's such a sweetheart. And he's in my fantasy baseball league. And he's in first or second.
Is he still?
He's up there.
That's awesome.
Right now, which
I'm happy
is surprising him. Because he's straight up dress
Boston Red Sox. His fantasy baseball is almost, I wish I were the manager of the Red Sox. That's what he should name his
team. I wish I won all the time.
Yeah. He should call it like it is, pretty much. But it was, yeah.
How did he react to your teenage rebellion? Because I can only, it being supportive.
Yeah, when I painted my nails, I remember my mom had a bigger problem with it than my dad. My mom was just like, this is weird. But my mom was coming at it from the sense that she didn't want people to make fun of me. That was where
because
she was
then
coming
from.
She
had to
bash
their
faces.
We'll get to the
Amish
story eventually.
Yeah. But, you know, she that was where she was coming from. So it was a place of love in the sense of, like, I'm her version of that's weird, you shouldn't be doing that, was really saying, like, you know, I'm concerned, I don't want people to pick on you, mm-hmm. you know. And so, but she was concerned. She was like, Bob, this is, you know, his paint his nails in blue. Black, I could see. You know, because she was, you know, lived in Brooklyn, went to CBGBs in the 70s and 80s. So she's, you know.
Stuff like that happened.
Yeah. Definitely. And so, you know, but me painting them, you know, sky blue, that was a little much for her. Mm. And so, but my dad just was like, eh, it's fine. That was his thing. He was like, it's a phase. He kind of knew I would get over it at some point. But
lo and behold,
I would butt heads with him, like, when I, and it's funny coming at it now, you know, being 30, looking at my 17-year-old self who's telling my dad, like, look, I don't care about college, and here's why. My band, Adam's Apples, the thrash punk band,
big.
We're gonna make it. I don't know if you know the recipe for success, but it is 10 second songs about Nintendo games. That's what it is.
It's an FYI, Grandpa. Wait, I guess it would be Grandpa.
But that was, you know, that I would butt heads with him on that, and he wanted me to kind of keep focused on like education and stuff, and I was just like, nah, screw you, old man. You know, I never said that to him, but that was the attitude.
Yeah, I'd be mad at you.
Yeah.
Teenager,
but I never did any, you know, there was never any real, like, big blowout thing, or I was never like, I'm leaving forever! Like, my parents were really awesome, they were always super supportive of me, and it was, you know, I grew up an only child in the sense that I didn't, you know, I have a brother and sister who I never lived with.
Or half.
Yeah, half brother and sister of my dad's first marriage, so, like, I, you know, totally cool with them, they're great people and I love them, but you know, I didn't grow up with them, so I didn't spend Christmas morning with them.
You were essentially,
I was essentially an only child, so you know, I growing up in that kind of environment, you know, my parents were very supportive, they never did anything, like, you know, so I didn't, no, there was just a few times I remember, like, you know, like that with my dad. I remember having the conversation with him about my band's gonna make it.
So don't worry about college,
don't worry, I got this. And then there was, with my mom, I just remember that was mostly when I was like 12, 13, and I would just, she would come in and clean my room. And I, obviously that made me annoyed. Which now, it's funny, because when you're a teenager, if your mom comes in, or dad, and cleans your room, you know, your initial reaction is anger. Like, don't clean my room.
Yeah,
get away from my room. And then, you
I
know,
I like it this way.
Yeah. And when people grow up, then they're like, I wish I had someone to just clean my room
all the time.
I just, like, when I came home, I wish it were just clean. I didn't have to clean it. So it's that full circle thing of them doing you a favor by cleaning your room so you don't have to live in filth,
getting angry,
and me being like, stay out of my room, this is my little space.
It's weird.
Yeah, it is.
Tell me the Onyx story, please. Because this is one of my favorite your mom's stories, and there are many.
So my mom, being an Italian woman from Brooklyn, super sweet, but she has her, like, if you get on her bad side, if you, like, step on any of her family or friends or something, that's it. Like, she'll yell. Which is funny, because she's a very, like, she's a nervous person if you get to know her. Like, if you get to know her and you ask her, like, you know, how do you feel about, like, being on the jury? She would be sweating bullets, like, oh my god. Like, that would give her agita nonstop. But, you know, in terms of this, like, with me, you see old, if you watch, there's this old video of me when I was in, like, I was 3. And, you know, I was on the monkey bars, and some kid, like, kind of moved me to go on the monkey bars, and she's like, if she pushes you, you push her back! You push her back! And she's yelling while she's filming me. And the kid's mother's probably right nearby, but she's just yelling, like, you push that kid back. You don't take that. So when
don't take no shit from nobody.
No. So in 1990, circa 93, I don't know the exact era. Back the Fuck Up came out,
right.
But when Onyx put out that record, I had a habit, being a suburban white kid. Their prime demographic,
needing
Onyx.
To listen
right.
to Onyx.
When Onyx was thinking about Back the Fuck Up, when they were like, okay, we just finished recording Me and Jack Black Vagina Finda. Really,
that's the name of a
song. That's the name of the song. I think it's track 10. But they were thinking, you know, we really got to give it to those suburban white kids who are going to be listening to this album. So I had a habit. Slam, big hit. And so I asked my mom, I'm like, can I have the Onyx album? I don't know if I said Back the Fuck Up. I don't remember. That's what it was called.
I hope so.
I don't know how MTV, like, worded it. Maybe they wrote, like, back up. I don't know what they put.
There must have been some kind
of
censor.
Yeah. But
the album.
I probably said I want the CD that Slam is on.
Right.
I want the Onyx CD Slam is on. And, you know, my mom said okay, and we were out shopping, and she figured she'd buy it for me, because my parents were big into music anyway. They didn't like Onyx. They were not big into hip-hop
no,
or rap.
They weren't.
No. I was
That's
funny.
Weird.
But, you know, I remember she bought it for me, and we were standing in line, so we're waiting to purchase it, and there was a woman either in front of us or behind us who saw my mom holding that, and me maybe being like, yeah, Slam, da-da-da, I don't know what I was doing.
The boys.
Right, I may have been singing about how excited I was to listen to the CD. And the woman said to my mom, like, oh, you're gonna let is that for him? And my mom's like, yeah. And she's like, you're gonna let your son listen to that? And my mom just, like, flips the lady off and goes, like, I'll let him listen to whatever I want. She just, like, flipped them off and just yelled that to the lady. She may have said whatever the fuck I want. I don't even know.
Right.
But she just instantly got angry when the woman, like, questioned my mom's parenting skills of saying, you're gonna let him listen to that. She was just like, screw off. She instantly had
what the fuck I'm doing.
And it was something similar that happened when one of the first movies I remember seeing, probably for the story reason, was Another 48 Hours. Which is the sequel to the Eddie Murphy
hours.
And Nick Nolte film,
right.
48 Hours. And I remember going to the theaters and seeing that, and I remember, I don't know how old I was, but I was a kid. I wasn't, you know, wasn't even 10 yet. Probably.
This is one of the first movies that you went to go see?
One of the first movies I remember seeing. I could have seen movies prior to this, but I remember specifically this movie because of the fact that people were saying to my parents, who were both there, you know, he shouldn't be here in this film right now. And my mom got really pissed off at them in the theater, too, and was just like, who cares? I'll see whatever he wants! Who cares? So she was instantly so aggravated that these people would care what I saw. Which, in reality, is true. It doesn't matter.
But, you know. I guess that you didn't grow up to be, like, this guy who curses his brains out all the time,
right.
Or,
right.
Like, knows a guy.
Right.
Know,
and that's
name,
the thing
whatever
is...
the black pussy find a...
Me and Jack.
Right.
Get my friend Jack's name right. And Black Vagina Finda. They
black...
were classy.
Oh, Vagina. Excuse
also,
me.
Also, that rhymed better.
Jack the Black...
Black Vagina Finda.
Oh,
that was kind of
okay.
It.
I gotcha. Yeah. It's the whole poetry thing. You have the English degree. I'm
well,
sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, I majored in Onyx. I wrote my thesis.
I just saw someone writing a thesis
on that.
Back the Fuck Up.
Yeah. Me and Jack, the exploratory nature of finding vaginas.
All right, so I think I covered essentially everything that I wanted to cover. We covered the webcomic stuff. We covered We did Dear Mr. So-and-So. That was a great time.
That was. And I want to point out Dear Mr. So-and-So.
By all means.
That was one of the most fun things that I ever did. And that was all your idea. I remember vividly.
Thank you.
Waking up one morning, because I am an old man, so I probably went to bed at 10. And I woke up and I checked my email. It was the era before smartphones, so I remember, or at least I didn't have one.
Right, right. And that was really the only way I communicated with anybody at that point because of my job.
Yes, and I checked.
I just emailed everybody all the time.
And I checked my email, and I remember you sending me an email being like, how would you like to do this project with me where we, like, you know, it's kind of like improv in the sense that I write a letter, you know, to you, and then you respond back in character, and we just kind of build a story that way.
Take a story wherever you want.
Loved it. I thought that was one of the best ideas ever. And it still probably goes down as the best name, which is all you as well.
I don't know where my creativity went, but I think I just poured all of it into the concept and the name of that thing.
I think that... I want to go back and reread all the stories that we did, but I honestly think that you could make a movie out of, like, The Open Road, that whole thing.
That's so good.
About the buddy comedy with a trucker and the trucker's son who loves buddy comedies. And they end up going across country and he's pissed off, he has to do it, and they end up in a buddy comedy. It's like that.
It's just it's almost
so
Inception.
Well.
We wrote Inception before Inception was a thing.
I thought that was great. And so that's something that I wanted to point out because that I had so much, I looked forward so much to getting to write those, like, Tuesday, Thursdays, we get to do it. And even though our readership was, like, two people.
Well, I mean, every once in a while, like, I would post it to Reddit, and then we'd get, like, 15 views until people realized it was a self-post. And they'd downvote it to hell.
But yeah, that was a lot of fun. And I think that was another, like, you know, cool, fun creative outlet that we got to do for a while, and that's true. Actually, people did read it more than I remember. We had our 1 year party.
We did. We actually had a party in which. Now that you mention it, all right. So we had the party. We had like 20 people.
I think so.
Like it was at John Harvard's. We were having a good time. We had this gift planned of writing a comic for everybody and having it available for everybody in which I would write a page and you'd write a page.
Yes.
And we went like three pages deep and the plan fell through.
Yeah.
We didn't have enough time, but I still have those three pages and Christina happened upon it 2 weeks ago.
Really?
Like, well, I think she was trying to clean my room or something.
I happened
like
upon
that.
Mine too.
And she's like, aw, what is Timmy doodling? You're so cute. It's you and Mike. Like, there's this whole big backstory to it, but you're not going to believe any of it. And
I love
so
I love
just
in Christina's mind at that moment, she found a doodle of you and me. Like, you sketched out a play date that we could have.
This is going to happen, and our car is going to break down, and we're just going to have an adventure.
I happened upon mine recently, too. It's funny you mentioned that. I have no idea where it is, but when we were moving in, I happened upon it, and it was just, it was fun to see it again and just actually, you know, relive that moment of and I forgot about it, too, actually, that whole comic thing.
We
still owe it to 20 people.
We do. Yeah, it was, actually, we probably owe it to everyone who's going to be listening to this,
probably.
To this podcast.
We'll have to
renew
that.
All of my listeners, we owe you one. I guess I'll move on to like the extra shit that I have put down here. We talked about this maybe 2-3 days ago, but what are you listening to right now?
Right now, I am listening to... at work, I'll listen to Spotify a lot. So I'll listen to a lot of, like, Billie Holiday and Etta.
Yep.
and, like, a lot of these, like, Chet Baker, Miles Davis type of stuff. I listen to that while I work. But in terms of... I've been listening to, like, non-old jazz.
you don't say.
I've been in a mood for, like, Tallest Man on Earth lately, again. I think because of summertime, Brett Denon as well.
Big Brett Denon kick.
Music that kind of pumps me up. I kind of got back... Once I found out, as I was the last man to find out ever about... I forget her name, but the lead singer of Against Me.
when I found out that whole thing was happening with her.
You found out?
I found out through you telling me that. Fionn covered Pints of Guinness.
And then I kind of went through the diatribe
of... You kind
of,
yeah, did the thing.
So he's a girl now, and that's pretty cool.
Right, you went through that. Oh, I forget her name. It's going to bother me. I forget everyone's name tonight. It's a running theme.
I know. Me too, though.
But you went through that whole thing, and ever since I found out with that, I was fascinated. I was just like, wow, I had no idea. And so I was reading up on that. That kind of got me into an Old Against Me kick.
Laura Grace? Laura yes. Jane? Or is Laura, it Laura Grace?
I think it's Laura Grace or something like that. Yeah, Laura Grace, I think.
Yeah,
yeah.
Okay.
Laura Grace.
So you've been on an Against Me kick as well.
I went on that. Just any kind of, like, pump me up, cool music. I started listening to your summer playlist on Spotify. So
those 15 songs that I had there. So, I'm working on it, man.
So you had like, a cool, like, yeah, Bomb the Music Industry on there, and just kind of fun, like, upbeat, not necessarily sloppy, but fun, upbeat, just, you know, balls to the wall, kind of punkish stuff.
And then James Brown.
Yeah,
and James Brown. James Brown.
But so I've been, it's been a weird mix, because I've been listening to a lot of that. And music, too, I'll go in my little kicks where I'll go through, like, I went through the huge Tom Waits phase,
mm-hmm.
and which I love Tom Waits, so it's not a phase in the sense that I'm over him, but that's all I would listen to for, like, a year.
Tom Waits is equated to you painting your nails.
Yeah. That's all I would listen to for a year was, like, Tom Waits, so, you know, but...
In fact, your winning song...
Is a Tom Waits song, yeah, Picture in a Frame.
Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful song. I
love that song, too. But yeah, it's been a lot of big mix of, you know, 30s to 50s jazz, and then, you know, 90. Oh, and like Replacements. Today, you and me went on a big Replacements kicks today, listening to the interview for Tommy Stinson.
Which I've gotten to the intro for, and I haven't even heard Tommy Stinson talk yet.
He tells some really interesting, he tells some stuff with the Replacements. Most of the stuff he kind of like knew about anyway, but like it's cool hearing his perspective of it, like his brother getting kicked out of the band and that whole type of thing happening. So it's cool listening to it.
Mm-hmm. Which makes your Last FM look like you are arguably the most pretentious person that I know, at least. And I know a lot of pretentious people. You're listening to old timey jazz, mm-hmm. and then. Yelly punk music.
Exactly, yeah. Be like, I had to listen to this Billie Holiday track, and then I decided that I would go straight for...
To mix it up, because, you know, I have such a wide array of tastes.
Array.
I don't have an English degree. So you are, with the Fionn, you are playing August something.
Yeah, it's the middle of August, I think the 17th. Again, but I'm not too sure. At this rate, I could have already looked up at a calendar and but one of those mid dates in August. If you you know, we're playing at Port Jeff Brewery, so it'll be like 7 to 9, 9:30, sometime around there.
September 14th at.
I think that may be.
Is that the Nutty?
Maybe I
don't
know.
The Nutty last year.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think so. I think it's either like McCarthy's or it's
It might be McCarthy's.
I think it's that.
And
I'll send you the details, and then you can post it at the end of your description of me.
Yeah, I gotta find out where I'm even posting this thing. And with Mike Golden's or Our Twilight Pastime, you are performing when?
Well, I'm playing this Saturday at Hop Drum Boutique.
You are?
Yes, from 4:30 to 7:30.
Cool.
I'm playing at Say Cheese up in Port Jeff. On Saturday, August 3rd, I believe that is. First Saturday in October. And
August.
Yeah. That's October? Wow. Yeah. Playing August 3rd, which is the first Saturday in October. I cut and paste my calendar.
That's fair.
Okay.
I understand.
But yeah, those are my upcoming ones. And then I kind of, with me, Our Twilight Pastime has always kind of been, hey, you know, you want to play? And I'm like, sure. Except for when we went on tour together in your old band,
which is
Coral,
another thing that we didn't even touch on, but that was like, that was A, like one of the most fun, some of the most fun I've had ever, but also like one of the most miserable experiences.
Yeah, it was a good mix of both of those things. Yeah, Disaster Tour 2006.
That'll be the second podcast that I have you on.
That will be, yeah.
We'll get into that.
I think I should come back maybe like, we'll do like a WTF thing, and episode 200, which you will definitely...
Almost definitely.
You'll get to. I'll interview you.
Oh, perfect.
And it'll be episodes... Yes, that's exactly what Mark Mara did in 200 of WWE.
Actually, Art of Wrestling, Colt Cabana, had CM Punk interview him.
See, there
on
you
the
go.
100th episode when he interviewed CM Punk on the first episode.
So, I like it. I like it.
There's a precedent for it.
All right.
Pretty much have to do it now.
Okay, I'm in.
All right, if my listeners who you're not already friends with
right.
want to follow you on social media,
mm-hmm.
you are on...
I'm on Twitter as /MikeGoldentz, and I would say that I post my shows on there, so that's probably the best way to go about it. I don't have an Artois of Pastime Twitter. I have an Artois of Pastime...
Bandcamp.
I have a Bandcamp. I have a Bandcamp. You can go and download all my music for free. I've always been very big on not charging anyone for my music.
Bandcamp.com/...
Artois of Pastime. Yep.
Cool.
And you can download all my stuff there. I'll probably be putting up, as we discussed, the Lost Little Bird album. And, you know, it's... I have a Facebook for Artois of Pastime, but I don't update too much. So
no.
I would stick with, I would stick with the Twitter. If you know me, you can, I guess, look on my Facebook. But but honestly, Twitter's probably the best bet, and Bandcamp just to download my stuff and find out when I have new stuff out.
Cool, and no Vine or anything like that.
Tomorrow, there's a good chance I'm going to be getting an iPhone.
Really?
Because my phone is a piece of crap that I have to restart it a bunch of times a day. It's junk. I hate it. I've been hating it for a long time, and Vine is one of those apps that is like when Instagram was only on the iPhone, I was seriously considering moving to iPhone. But the biggest reason, aside from just me making stupid 6-second videos, is Siri. I need Siri in my life. Did you see how I just forgot? My wife right now is my Siri, because she reminds me that I'm playing when I am. Otherwise, I forget. So clearly, I need someone to say, like, Siri, remind me that I'm performing on the 19th.
With that being said, like, I have an iPhone 5, and I still rely on Christina for remembering everything. Like, what's happening this weekend?
Oh,
I don't know.
That's why every time, and because some of these listeners, not all, but some will be people we know, I want to apologize when I say to you guys, you know, let me see what we're doing that day. This is the reason. It's because, as was just proven, I forget. And I don't like double booking plans, and Katie hates double booking plans, just because of the fact that she's a woman of her word. So if she says, I'm doing something, she's going to do it. So if I speak for her and say we're going to go to this party, and then it turns out we were in Connecticut that day, she's like, you're the one telling them.
This is all your fault.
This is all you. Yeah.
All right. There's one last question.
Cool.
I'm going to play out this podcast with one of your songs,
mm-hmm.
and I wanted you to pick, not necessarily your favorite, but the one that you want whoever's listening to this to hear.
I would say that I was kind of debating between two, and I'll just give a quick explanation. One is a new one that isn't even on the Little Bird one yet.
Whoa,
newer than that. And one is on Drunken Sailors. So I think we'll do a throwback, and I'll go for the last track on Duncan. Not Duncan Sailors.
Duncan Sailors, man. We've been talking about Onyx so much.
And I know, I can't help it. Duncan. Boom. But Drunken Sailors, The Way Home, the last one, Way Home Before Castle song. I like that song, and I always really liked it, and I feel like it... I never, like, played it out live or did anything with it, so I feel like let's give that a little something.
All right.
Play it out with that.
All right. That'll be the song.
Okay.
Mike, thanks a lot for letting me eat your food and for hanging out for a little while, and hopefully we'll have you on for episode 100.
Yeah. Well, thanks a lot. Thanks for having me.
Of course, man. All right, guys, that's my interview with Mike Goldens. I want to, again, thank Mike for coming on and doing my first ever podcast. That was a lot of fun. Hopefully you guys enjoyed it. Again, if you want to follow Mike, you can get him on Twitter at Mike Goldens, youtube.com/formentionable, we think. And Our Twilight Pastime on Bandcamp. He does a lot of fantastic stuff, so if you guys are at all interested in any kind of decent music, well, I mean, very good music, follow Mike on Our Twilight Pastime. This has been Hey, Can I Come Over? I'll see you next time.
that we picked up, so it's something we can shake. We'll watch this bounty of our sadness fall to the earth like the leaves. Well, it's autumn now and we're stuck getting rid of our sins. And everything our friends tell us to drop again. Maybe it's a number or a name or that last shot, but just some vice we use to forget our state. Stranger's last, just like a crow picking at what's dying inside. Those simple pleasures we tried so hard to keep alive. So now just tell me what you are praying for, and I'll share mine with you. 'Cause we both desperately know what's gotta come true. Well, we know it's gotta come true. Make sure